This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. Today's innovations are tomorrow's possibilities. Become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
So, Eric, we had this discussion about a new sector that I think is a really interesting one. Marijuana has obviously had a ton of attention over the past decade and change now as it's become more and more legal. But psychedelics and mushrooms are sort of viewed as the next potential chapter. And we even have states in the U.S. that are starting to legalize some of this. And there's even a new ETF that's all about this.
Yeah, I remember I was at my dad's in Florida around the New Year's Eve weekend, and I looked at my ETF clips, which I get sent from Google every day, and I was like, psychedelic stocks? I mean, what does that just mean, like really cool stocks? And then I looked into it. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's tracking mushrooms. And then I did a little more research, and it's really crazy that there's a whole shroom scene. If you go on Twitter, there's like a lot of people, and it reminded me of like the early days of cannabis. I don't know, it stuck out to me, and I was just very curious about it, especially because the company who did it is the one who kicked off the marijuana ETF category, essentially, which is named Horizons. So I was watching this from the get-go, and now it's finally launched, and it's up in Canada.
So joining us on this episode of Trillions is Steve Hawkins, who is the man behind it, and we're going to talk to him about what it was like to come up with this idea and bring it to market, and what he hopes to have happen. Do you know him, Eric, from your days at Inside ETF?
Oh, yeah.
Which would be happening right about now in sunny climates.
I know you guys love when I drop the word circuit, but I have seen him a lot on the ETF circuit. I mean, you'll bump into Steve at the conferences, especially the ones in Canada, and I'm up in Toronto a lot. He's a great guy. He honestly was, like I said, he was ahead of everybody with the marijuana ETF. And now that's well over $1 billion, that whole category. So, and they have a lot of other ETFs, by the way. But that's the one that is most like this new one they have.
This time on Trillions, psychedelics. Steve, welcome to Trillions.
Joel, Eric, thank you very much for having me today.
So Eric and I were wondering, as we were inviting you on, how can we get some samples of your ETF?
Or do you? Can we get some in-kind? Do you do in-kind redemptions with the underlying?
Well, you know, as Americans, there's not a lot of ways for you to buy Canadian ETFs yet. There's only a couple of little different brokerages. And this ETF is listed on the NEO Stock Exchange here. If you can find a U.S. brokerage to buy the units of the ETF, you can redeem them in kind directly with Horizons ETFs, and we will somehow deliver you some samples cross-border.
Wow, that's a feat. And I can tell you've actually been asked this question before.
It was honestly, when we launched HMMJ in 2017, it was the very first question that we got asked. I went on Bloomberg TV and Amber Kanwar is like, I don't like the ticker, but can I redeem in kind for some samples, please?
I mean, you know, we joke, and it is funny because I was just talking to Joel. I'm like, it's not only mushrooms, there's ketamine in there. There's basically a lot of the stuff that we took in the 90s at parties is now like medicine. And I feel like we were actually medical pioneers. We were way ahead on curing depression. And, you know, what do you think about that? Isn't that kind of crazy? That's why it's funny, is because this used to be the stuff that you weren't supposed to do and you did at parties.
Well, the 60s and 70s are back is the way that I'm looking at it. And people are going to start wearing the tie-dye shirts again. I wore a pretty fancy shirt at the market open the other day. But, you know, it is absolutely, it's not just psilocybin. It's not just magic mushrooms. Ketamine is a very important ingredient out there. There's a company that's also creating synthetic psilocybin. So, I mean, one of the knocks that we got when we launched HMMJ is we had an investee company in there that was creating a synthetic CBD, and people didn't like that. It's like, this is anti-marijuana. But, you know, this is all really a part about the drug industry and therapeutics for, you know, the over 700 million people in the world that are suffering from mental illness and eating disorders and depression and addiction. And, you know, these are being tested drugs. This is not a recreational thing, even though that's where sort of a lot of the marijuana industry is very focused. The psychedelics industry is really focused on science and going through the rigorous FDA and Health Canada drug testing protocols to bring real therapeutic drugs to marketplace.
And I mean, that is a really interesting thing to talk about. And if you followed journalists like Michael Pollan, who's been writing about a lot in this space for years now, you know, it does feel like it could be the sort of the tip of the spear for how we treat a lot of things like PTSD, depression. So how big of an opportunity do you think this could be, Steve?
I mean, right now we just really don't know. I mean, according to the World Health Organization, there's over 700 million people that are suffering from some form of mental illness in this regard. You know, depression and clinical depression really haven't seen any advancements in treatments in decades. And it's really only as a result of some of the things that Eric mentioned earlier, like state laws changing, new exemptions coming in for companies in Canada. You know, we've created new rules around Health Canada. I mean, we were the first, you know, G7 country to legalize marijuana. But the drug market itself, or the illicit drug market, the government is really starting to look at things a little bit differently and allow companies to do more and more testing in this regard to open it up. But, you know, with J&J as an example is a company that's in here because they came to market with a ketamine drug, which was developed from a molecule from a Canadian psychedelics company, which then sold it to a company, which then J&J bought. And now they have a nasal-based spray depression drug, which has hit the marketplace. And, you know, AbbVie, another very large drug company, is also working on a ketamine antidepressant drug as well, which is still in testing. But there's so many different new psychedelic opportunities and therapies that are going there. But like, some of the companies are working strictly on the delivery mechanism of those therapeutics as well. So it's you know, how can we do microdosing of LSD more efficiently? You know, I've never microdosed LSD yet, but, you know, I think it's something that I might have to think about if I was a depressed person. I'm not really, but, you know, I have other potential addictions that I might have to treat with my micro LSD. So we'll go from there.
Well, I'm sure you can come up with some new ETF ideas if you start doing that. I'm sure we'll get even more creative over there. But in all seriousness, I think one thing I have thought about cannabis and shrooms and all this stuff becoming a little more accepted in mainstream is the fact that there was an opioid crisis and people are looking for some other way to treat a lot of things that aren't that. Did that open the gateway to this, or do you think this, all of this stuff would have happened regardless?
I mean, I think that was a big genesis to the sort of cannabis revolution that we started to see in late 2016, 2017, and it becoming significantly more mainstream. I think you're absolutely right from a medical therapeutics perspective, because cannabis, like CBD especially, is significantly safer than fentanyl and other opioids, which can significantly, which are very, very addictive. You know, the thing with the microdosing and psilocybin and ketamine is it's still in the early stages of sort of approvals and testing and things like that. And they've been highly addictive in the past, but it's really the microdosing that is sort of moving away from the addictive opioids that we're saying. And so I would 100% agree that it was a genesis of an entire movement in pharmaceutical therapeutics to move away from opioids. And doctors are so much more inclined to prescribe non-addictive therapies to treat like clinical depression and things like that. And that's where I think, back to Joel's point, there is a huge opportunity from a global perspective for this industry. I mean, the one thing that we really have to think about from behind the scenes, though, is there's still a stigma to magic mushrooms and to psychedelics. And, you know, cannabis is much more mainstream from a everyday recreational use. This is really, you know, psychedelics is not, doesn't really have a recreational opportunity except in a very, very small portion of the marketplace.
This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. What do all the greatest innovations have in common? Agents, people who participate in progress by supporting cutting-edge ideas. Invesco QQQ is a fund that allows you access to innovators of the NASDAQ 100 all in one fund. So you don't have to be an inventor to help create what's next to come. Anyone can become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm actually curious about that, the stigma that you mentioned, though, because as we saw with cannabis, it really just takes time, and suddenly that perception can change. I mean, do you think that's true of this opportunity in the psychedelic space, or is the stigma completely different than cannabis?
No, I mean, because this is going to be like doctor prescribed medicines for you, I think that stigma is going to go away very, very quickly as soon as we see real results happening with people. And we've already seen that in a lot of the drug testing already. I mean, there's probably 25 to 30 drugs specifically in drug testing right now in phase two, phase 2A, phase 2B testing out there, some in phase 3 testing. And I really think that as there are more drugs approved, there are more doctors that are prescribing these medicines, just like you see with CBD, CBD oil, CBD treatment, CBD ointments on your knees. We're going to see a significant ramp up in the use of psychedelic-based therapies.
So that actually really interesting thing there, to have that many drugs in development, and frankly, only a handful that are already sort of out there and available. I mean, that kind of presents a challenge for you to bring an ETF to market. And I'm curious, when you look through your holdings, you know, your top 10 there, you mentioned a couple of them already, but how are you navigating that challenge? And then what of those top holdings do you find to be really, really interesting?
Well, I mean, we put a couple of big pharma in there that are, you know, touching this space, that are not necessarily that active. And we had to do that to sort of round out the portfolio and get enough diversity in the exposure of the portfolio. I mean, similar when we launched HMMJ, we had Scott's Miracle-Gro in there, which people are like, why did you put Scott's Miracle-Gro? Well, it's very, very active in the cannabis space, cannabis growing opportunities. Here, we, as I mentioned, we have J&J and AbbVie, you know, but some of the bigger companies that have out there recently, MindMed, which did a very, very large IPO, which is a New York-based company, but it's listed on a Canadian stock exchange because no U.S. stock exchange will list a potentially illegally operating company at this point in time. But Cybin, which is one of my near and dear favorites, which is one of the largest companies in there as well, from a weight perspective, has so many drug therapies in process. But not only that, is they're very, very focused on the whole delivery mechanism. And, you know, microdosing through a mental health professional in the past has taken like 3 to 4 hours. Like that just doesn't, you can't sustain a significant amount of population and therapeutic addresses with that long of a treatment. You know, there's got to be a better way to do this micro LSD implementation, and the therapeutic applications of the mechanisms and the devices is going to be very, very important to this industry as well. But I mean, those are sort of like the Compass, Compass Pathways, which is a UK-based firm listed in the US, is also very big in this space as well. And they're the ones that are sort of creating the synthetic psilocybin. And they have some derivatives that they're making out of that, which has been very, very positive as well from a physical test perspective. To your point about, you know, how could we create an ETF? It was really the changes in the capital markets in 2020 with some of the state rules changing, some of the companies becoming more active. You know, it's still, I'm going to say, a micro cap, small cap portfolio on an overall basis, but it's very, very focused on the psychedelics industry itself. And it's just, you know, we have more names in the portfolio now, though, than we launched when we launched the first marijuana ETF in 2017, because we only had 15 names in the portfolio. We launched with 17 names in the portfolio this week.
Yeah, I actually wrote about it in a note, and two things struck me. One was just the seriousness of all of the medical research, the grants. You know, you go on Johns Hopkins, has a whole team dedicated to this. And it quickly realized this is serious business, even though we joked earlier. And then the other thing is how small the companies were. And you addressed this a little bit, but for let's just ETF nerd out a little bit here. If you're designing this ETF, and you obviously want to capture this as best you can, but then you see like Johnson & Johnson in there. Obviously, I'm sure psychedelics are a tiny fraction of their overall revenue. Do you plan to sort of work out those bigger names as the smaller guys get bigger and go turn into small and mid caps? How does that process work when you're trying to capture this as purely as possible?
I mean, that's a great question, Eric. And it, you know, if you look at the evolution and the maturity of the cannabis market right from the very start to the end, I mean, our underlying index to HMMJ has changed seven times since we launched in 2017. As that market has evolved, as market caps have significantly grown, you know, we've actually had to reduce the portfolio. We've reduced the sort of non-marijuana focused names. And that's exactly what's here. I mean, with Big Pharma, there's a cap in the fund for individual and overall exposure at 20%. But that actually will go down over time as the rest of the industry sort of grows and matures, as you said. And, you know, there's a lot of sort of, we had to build this index so that it would actually change and mature with the industry itself. And the underlying stock price will increase, the average daily trading volume will increase, the market cap threshold to get into the index, all of those things will increase as the industry itself matures. And that was very, very important to us as building this index for the fund.
I'm actually curious, just on that idea of you know, this the evolution, if you will, of the ETF and the holdings and the weightings. What did you learn from having the cannabis ETF before that helped you navigate the launch of this one?
Dealing with third-party service providers, which was one of the biggest pains in my butt when launching HMMJ, and like getting your auditors, your custodian, the stock exchange. It wasn't the fund regulators, what was actually the easiest part. And here going into the psychedelic space, there was, for a lot of the third parties, again, there was a lot of, I'll call it reputational risk. So I had to go to a different stock exchange that allows psychedelic companies to be listed on it. And I had to go through a significant amount of sort of approval processes with our third-party service providers. Like, you know, we BNY Mellon is our custodian, and they're the largest global custodian out there. And you know, it was a process to get the approvals for that. And, you know, that was getting all of those approvals in advance was very, very important for the timing of when we wanted to get launched. Because when we tried to launch HMMJ, I mean, it took us 4 months to get those approvals. Here, I got all of those approvals at a time. But going back to Eric's point about the sort of the evolution of the underlying industry, I would say that is the single biggest lesson we learned, was how to build an index that changes over time as an industry matures. So we're in here early for sure, and we know that. But one of the great things about an ETF is it supports the underlying industry itself. There's almost like a self-fulfilling promise here to do well, because you're supporting this psychedelic industry itself. And we're very, very happy to be in this industry where it can be so beneficial to the public itself at the end of the day.
And, you know, another kind of ETF nerd question, but I think important as an investor, one of the things about HMMJ that was fascinating is you guys broke the record for positive tracking error or tracking difference. In other words, if you look at the first year and a half of this fund, it was up 55%, but the index was only up 28%. Normally, an ETF, you're lucky if it tracks perfectly. This was giving you 26 percentage points, doubled it. It was almost like you were an active manager. And obviously, this is because you were lending out shares of the stocks because people wanted to short them and they'll pay you a fee for it. And you were able to put that back into the fund. It has gone down a little bit. I guess the interest to short has subsided a bit on cannabis. But do you see that as being something that would also help with the new ETF in terms of having some of these smaller, harder to get stocks and then being able to use some of that money to juice performance a little?
Absolutely, that is going to happen here as well. You know, I mean, Robinhood really changed the lending market last year. And, you know, after three very, very strong years of lending in the cannabis space, lending rates, as soon as Robinhood went online and started lending, lending rates in the cannabis sector went down almost 300% from where they were, or 75%, like from 100 to 25. And in this day, in this space, it's still very, very early. There's still a lot of founder stock. There's still a lot of restricted stock. The floats are much smaller in these companies, and there's a significant lending opportunity. So again, we're going to be dealing with the average lending rate in our portfolio is probably minus 30 or 3,000 basis points, minus 30, we call it in the lending terms. From an annualized lending rate. So that could, you know, we're allowed to lend up to 50% of the portfolio at this point in time. In theory, we're going to be paying you to own psychedelic stocks between 10 and 15% on an annualized basis without any stock movement at all.
That is an amazing, this is Joel. I mean, we talked about, you know, this whole Wall Street bets wants to like stick it to the hedge funds. This is a very safe and legal way to do that, because hedge funds are the one who like to short stocks. So a lot of ETFs, not just Horizons, we talk with Vanguard's Jerry O'Reilly. He does it with the biggest fund in the world, where you get money from hedge funds to subsidize the ETF. In Jerry's case, it's a few bips. In this case, it can be a lot. I find that fascinating, that the small investor is getting paid by the hedge funds through the ETF lending process. I don't know. People don't talk about it much, but in this space, it can be very dramatic and really give you extra return.
Okay. So I hate to bring just a little bit of anxiety to the party, but it seems fitting since, you know, we're talking about psychedelics and there's always got to be like a little bit of weirdness associated with trips. But Steve, you know, there are considerable challenges that you're going to face yet, and some of those are going to be probably regulatory and adoption and the results of the clinical trials and everything else that we've talked about. How are you thinking about what that downside and what those risks might look like for this opportunity? Because it does seem like, you know, it's early and things could change dramatically. How are you assessing that?
I mean, those are all very good points, Joel. I mean, the big thing here is we believe that this is a very early stage opportunity, much like cannabis was in 2017. And we've seen some significant highs and significant lows to that industry as it has matured. And I don't doubt that we're going to see that here. The one nice thing is all of these companies have been able to raise significant amount of capital of late very, very easily. They've been going out to marketplace. AMC, who recently did that interesting stock offer. But, you know, this is an early stage industry for sure. They need a lot of capital. We're going to be there to help support that through the ETF. But the companies themselves have been able to access the Canadian capital markets and even the U.S. hedge funds and family offices and things like that. I mean, you've got big names like Kevin O'Leary and Bruce Litton that are throwing millions of dollars into this industry, supporting some of the companies. They're on the boards or advisors to these companies. You know, these are guys that are very, very active out there as personal investors. And when I see that, it makes me stand up and say, hey, you know, there might be something to this. And to Eric's point, like, I had no idea the followers of the psychedelic stock industry until we filed that prospectus, and I got 1,000 emails, and it was unbelievable from all of these followers. I mean, it's extremely active in Reddit and all of these other stock forums. And it's been fantastic to watch, and the hype that we've seen, like the number of hits on our website, is gone up 50% simply because of psychedelics. And HMMJ has always been the most active ETF on our website by a long shot. That and our leveraged and inverse leveraged oil this past year, but outside of marijuana, like psychedelics has been a windfall just from a press and activity and hype perspective. It's been great to watch.
You don't have to be a rocket scientist to help realize a mission to Mars. Become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Canada. I feel like you guys have very liberal regulators. You know, Joel, we did the whole documentary on the first ETF, and they designed it here in the U.S., but Canada was able to sort of, I don't know, take the idea, so to speak, and get it listed there earlier.
If you think about it, like the SPAC episode that we did
the
earlier.
The SPAC guy was earlier, Julian.
Yeah. So I do feel like in many ways, you know, we're just following your lead, Steve. What is it about Canada and your capital markets that allows you to be so adventurous and innovative?
I have to say, our regulators are just smarter than the SEC. You know, it's probably just as simple as that. I mean, we brought active ETFs to the marketplace over 10, non-transparent active ETFs over 10 years ago. You know, it's just we can evolve the underlyings of the ETF industry a lot faster. Unfortunately, our markets are, you know, significantly smaller from an investment capital perspective overall. But you know, I mean, I take a little bit of offense to Eric's point that we copied the U.S. filing on marijuana because, you know, they filed their prospectus on Thursday and my prospectus got received by the regulators on the Friday. And then I was able to launch within 2 months and they took 8 months to launch from there. But, you know.
Time out, guys. Let me clarify something here. I was talking about the original ETF, SPY.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, not you. No. I'm not. Yeah. That's okay. A case where I even got, what's his name? Peter Haynes.
Yes, who was from TD.
One of the founding fathers up there. And he said, yeah, okay, the idea was hatched in the U.S., but we launched it here sooner. You know, what can I tell you? So he admitted it, even though every time you go to a Toronto ETF conference, they do this touchdown dance about having the first ETF. And I'm like, well,
where was,
you honestly
where
got
was
it
the
from
first ETF born, Eric? Come on, it was Toronto.
Yeah, but the idea was here, and we just have an SEC. It took 4 years.
Steve, I got to ask you the closing question that we love to ask many people on Trillions, which is, what is your favorite ETF ticker that is not your own?
I like MJ in the US. It's very, very simple. It's very, very straightforward. They were a nice follower to our ETF.
Wait. Hold on. How could you not pick Toke if you're going to be in that category here? I mean, that's a plus. It's a verb. Verb tickers are the best. Toke. I don't know. I think that one's Mount Rushmore, but maybe I'm just biased.
Well, there will soon be stocks that have the ticker like Shroom or, you know, something along those lines. I mean, we went psych, but there was already a stock that was PSYC, So we went PSYK with our new ETF.
We thought, so there was one that just launched here called Dude. I thought that might've been a decent one. And also Ben Johnson at Morningstar had TRPN tripping. But then again, I guess that deviates. This is not recreational. This is for serious depression curing.
Absolutely.
Not a party absolutely. I went to in the '90s.
I don't know what else they were serving at those parties you went to in the '90s, Eric, but I'm
this
sure
is pre-cell phone, so anything goes.
Yeah. Pre-cell phone San Francisco, I think, too, right?
Pre-cell phone, good economy. Yeah. It was a beautiful time.
No cameras makes all the difference.
Yeah. All right, Steve Hawkins, thanks so much for joining us on Trillions.
Joel, Eric, thank you so much for having me today. I had a great time, and I hope we have a lot of fun with Magic Mushrooms going forward.
Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter. I'm at Joel Weber Show. He's at Eric Balchunas. And you can find more about Steve Hawkins and Horizons at horizonsetfs.com. This episode of Trillions was produced by Magnus Hendrickson. Francesca Levy is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. Bye.
You don't have to be a rocket scientist to help realize a mission to Mars. Become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.